Okay, we're fucking back. How's everybody doing?
Good, how are you?
I'd be better if another brick in the wall was not just $6,500 of cocaine. It's Mr. Rob's motherfucking fortune.
Thank you for that introduction. Now I'd like to introduce this man. He raises the blade. He makes the change. He cuts his foreskin into the shape of a plane. It's Joe.
Thank you. And may God bless America.
All right. What did you think, Rob?
It was great.
I heard a big period of silence and then Obama congratulated. Yeah, sounds good.
That's a disappointment I got from Obama.
I didn't even realize that was Obama.
It's Obama. Everybody got Obama phone. All right. But, you know. Last introduction. He's on the run, escaping his gay thoughts. It's Mr. Jack Falcon.
Does anyone ever get away from the gay thoughts or what, Jamal?
Nah, man.
How's it work for you?
It's tough, man. First thing I look at Brad Pitt, and then I just jerk off, and that's it. You know? You got to get rid of the demon. You know, got to get rid of that.
He is a handsome man,
dude. Would you fuck Brad Pitt, or would Brad Pitt fuck you?
He would fuck you. I think he's doing the banging. He's doing the thrusting around here.
You're the power bottom, or the
probably
power, or the power top. All right, let's.
I don't know. It'd be weird, isn't it? Like I'm thinking about it. I think it'd be weird, like fucking Brad Pitt.
Yeah, he's too manly for me, you know. But let's get to the news. All right, U.S. politics is a three-ring fucking circus.
What would they do now?
It looks like we got two fucking strike groups in the Mediterranean and in the Red Sea. So any day now, we're going to go back to war and...
I'm going to come.
You know, and that's it. You know, we're fucked. So World War III is about to start. Thank you, everyone. And that's all I got.
I have some questions for you. And this is coming because, you know, I have a PhD in whiteness, so I have a natural curiosity for this sort of thing. And you, as a Latino, even if you said something racist, there'd be nothing wrong with it. So are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, true or false? Blackface is wrong, but only if white people do it.
Yes, that's true. That's true. So Latinos can get away with it. We just have to have a Dominican cousin. That's the only way you can get away with it.
But you do have one, so
absolutely.
Okay, yeah, the question comes because, like, apparently there are TikTokers from Asia who put on blackface and, dress like Kendrick Lamar, say the N-word a lot, and, like, you know, like, who is the intended audience for these videos?
So that's that's wrong, all right? And I'll tell you why, because the race war, according to the Gospel of Patrice, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Latinos chose black people, right? Between the white and black race war. Asians chose white. So technically what they're doing is wrong. And we have to include the fucking the Indians and the Hindus and all them too. They're going to the white side, right? Because if there's a racial draft, the only Asians, Latinos and blacks would take are Filipinos. That's it. That's that's all we're taking. Koreans, they're going to the white side. Fucking Mongolians, they're going to the white side.
So if they chose white before, there's no way to re-choose if they don't want white anymore?
Nope. There was a draft held regarding this issue, man. And I don't control that. The black people control that shit, man. They control everything that deals with race. Because if Rob said the N-word today, that's it. He's fucking, he's done. He'll get robbed immediately. His shoes taken, and he'll be concussed at Mass General, and they'll be like, "What happened?" He's like, "I said the N-word," and then it happened again, you know, because the orderly would beat the shit out of him. So,
there's no coming back if I say that. So, can't be done.
I get a pass, and I think I went to dinner with Ray on Friday, and then we went to go see. Went to the Comedy Store, saw Neil Brennan, who was a writer for for the Chappelle Show. Great, great show. But you should, dude, there was like all four comics just politically incorrect, bro. And the blue haired fuckers, the people with no sense of humor weren't laughing at it. And I'm like, dude, you have to, like, I got made fun of by comedians while I was there because I was sitting in the front row and I just laughed my ass off. Like, if you can't laugh about shit, like, what are you doing with your life? Just laugh about yourself. If you're getting me fun of, just laugh. When did every man turn into some bitchified? You can't say that. You're getting pussified, bro. It's disgusting. I hate it.
You don't want to be the dude from Nickelback. You have to embrace the meme. Otherwise, you're just going to be miserable every day.
Yeah. Be Kevin James.
Yes.
There it is.
Embrace the meme.
Are you ready to talk about shitty Pink Floyd?
Yeah.
Ready when you are.
Oh, yeah. It's rock and roll.
All right, so we're going to talk about Pink Floyd today. So there have been different members in the band, but in this era from 1973 to 1979, there were only four members. Dave Gilmour played guitar and sings. Roger Waters plays bass guitar and sings. Nick Mason plays drums, and Richard Wright plays the organ or keyboards or whatever. So these are the four members of the band that we have at this time period. We're going to talk about four records today, and they all come chronologically in time. And we're going to start with Dark Side of the Moon. The Dark Side of the Moon. Are we ready to go?
Yeah.
Oh, the thing I forget all the time is, this information all comes from Wikipedia. So if it's wrong here, it's wrong there. I'm not trying to steal anyone's shit. Okay. The Dark Side of the Moon is a 10-track record released in 1973, coming in just under 43 minutes long. It's the band's eighth studio album, reaching number one on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart, and contains the singles Money and Us and Them. Dark Side builds on ideas explored in Pink Floyd's earlier recordings and performances while omitting the extended instrumentals that characterized their earlier work. The group employed multi-track recording, tape loops, and analog synthesizers. Engineer Alan Parsons was responsible for many of the sonic aspects of the recording and for the recruitment of session singer Claire Torrey, who appears on The Great Gig in the Sky. Gilmour and Waters cited in 1971's Metal Gilmour and Waters cited 1971's Metal as a turning point towards what would later be realized on The Dark Side of the Moon. The album's lyrical themes include conflict, greed, the passage of time, death, and insanity, the last inspired in part by the previous member Syd Barrett's deteriorating mental state. The Dark Side of the Moon was recorded at EMI Studios in approximately 60 days between May 1972 and February 1973. Pink Floyd were assigned staff engineer Alan Parsons, who had worked as assistant tape operator on their fifth album, 1970's Adam Hart Mother, and had gained experience as a recording engineer on the Beatles' Abbey Road and Let It Be albums. The Dark Side sessions made use of advanced studio techniques as the studio was capable of 16-track mixes, which offered greater flexibility than the 8 or 4-track mixes Pink Floyd had previously worked with. Mix supervisor Chris Thomas recalled later there were only two or three tracks for drums when it came to mixing. Depending on the song, there would be one or two tracks of guitar, and these would include the solo and rhythm guitar parts. One for keyboard, one for bass, and one or two for sound effects. They had been very, very efficient in the way that they worked. Each side of the vinyl album is a continuous piece of music. The five tracks on each side reflect various stages of human life, beginning and ending with a heartbeat, exploring the nature of the human experience. The name of the record comes from a lyric in the song Brain Damage. And if the band you're in starts playing different tunes, I'll see you on the dark side of the moon. The artwork depicts a prismatic spectrum. It was designed in response to Richard Wright's request for a simple and bold design, which would represent the band's lighting and the album's themes. The Dark Side of the Moon has been certified 15 times platinum and is the third best-selling album in history. Rob, what do you think of The Dark Side of the Moon?
Wow. So I didn't know it was the third best selling in history. Actually, I thought this album was like, okay, I knew this album was a big deal to other people, but I thought that like The Wall was everyone's number one, or at least on Spotify it is. And then fucking whatever. Anyways, this album for me was kind of like a before and after album, like a life-changing album for me and for my brother too. This was actually like the end of his, the beginning of the end of his metal phase. He was kind of sick of those sorts of things, and then this changed everything for him. It changed everything for me too. The difference is metal is still my number one. But yeah, like when I think of like, some of the stuff, it was like, my brother had never heard a saxophone that he didn't hate until this album. Like all of the like oohs and ahs that he thought were like super like old school, somehow like they presented it like tactfully. But even without that, like my brother at the time had made this like album that was supposed to flow from beginning to end like as one song, and he like, you know, he had only heard a couple albums ever do that, but like Dark Side of the Moon does that like, you know, 30 years before him in 73. And supposedly this is I was told that you can sync up this album to The Lion's Roar and The Wizard of Oz. And so like, okay, so not only is this album like awesome, but also it syncs up to this other piece of art. And like so many of these songs go from song to song so fluidly. Like I'm thinking specifically of, hold on one second, Us and Them into Any Color You Like into Brain Damage. Like those three flow really well. And like to me, just there were so many 200 IQ decisions on this album. And like you know, if me and my brother were sick of like Billy Corgan types who seem to you know, turn it all into like, watch how fast I can make everything about me. You know, I listen to this album and I don't hear, at least on this album, I don't hear one guy hogging everything. I fucking love David Gilmour, and he's a master of less is more. And you know, so I might have the guitar player might be my favorite here, but there's so many like guitar, keyboard. I'm so surprised to hear that there's only two tracks for guitars, because to me there's so much. If certain bands have a tendency to like cram everything into one fucking guitar, like this band spreads it all across keyboards, guitars, fucking saxophones, fucking choruses of women singing, fucking whatever. To me, this was mastery in like spreading it out across the voices rather than hearing one fucking thing oversaturate everything. But when I think of why this band was revolutionary for me, I'm going to bring up this on some other albums too. But it's less is more, it's key changes, it's mood changes. You know, like I was really dead set on music theory being like my fucking thing. I used to say when I heard this album, I was like 15 years old. I'm like, I'm studying music theory with my guitar teacher, and I'm like, I'm gonna make music theory into music law. And then I saw fucking David Gilmour like throw in some chromatic shit, and I'm like, okay, everything I fucking thought about music is I no longer believe. I've seen fucking things I thought were not possible to do smoothly. And so I had a bunch of moments like that with this album. And when I think of how like Neurosis might have been the first band to make me feel, okay, so if I feel like a space alien that doesn't belong on this earth or amongst other human beings, then Neurosis was like, okay, you feel, the people have made you feel like your differentness is a bad thing, but what if you, that thing that makes you different is your strength? What if you team up with other like-minded people like you and you fucking make a life-changing album, and you what if this thing that everyone taught you is your weakness, what if that's actually your strength? I had a very similar feeling this album had a same vibe but opposite, you know, with this album and with The Wall. There's you know, themes of madness, and you know, it's, well, I'm going to compare it to Superman or something. Like, Superman's super strong, but there's the kryptonite thing, which is his weakness. And, you know, so these albums go into, like, Syd Barrett, who fucking did a bunch of psychedelics. Was he a genius, or did he kill himself? Well, he didn't literally kill himself, but you know what I mean? Like, he went down places. He opened doors he couldn't close once they were opened. And so I don't know, with some of these lyrics, okay, yeah, Brain Damage especially. I think this album came out after One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was about lobotomies and some other shit. We forget that was done, like, in our parents' time. We don't do fucking lobotomies anymore. I don't think anyone my age and younger has gotten a lobotomy, but, you know, fucking One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Brain Damage, you know, we're talking about lobotomies here, and that was a conversation we needed to have. We did some fucking crazy shit, like, you know, recently in human history. Anyways, So to me, this album's fucking awesome. Oh yeah, money. When I we talk all the time about my fucking boner from a sugar, like Money, 1973. Here's a pop song that's played on the radio, one of their biggest fucking songs in fucking 7/4. I don't know how many people, like, when I think about time signatures, it's like 95% of music is 4/4 or 8/8 or, you know, something divisible by 4. 4% of music is 3/4, 6/8, you know, something divisible by 3. The remaining 1% of music is something else. And, you know, a very microscopic portion of that is pop music. Everything else is, you know, punks doing something in a garage somewhere. But yeah, for Money to be like as catchy as it is in an odd time signature, it's like, again, fucking magic being done before my eyes. Things that I thought were impossible, fucking Pink Floyd did. And Us and Them, one of my all-time favorite songs. And when I think of, you know, my boner for like screaming metal, double bass, whatever, you know, Us and Them is one of those songs that's like, it's quiet on purpose and not to, not even to build it up into something else. It's just, I don't know. In some ways, the quiet parts of Us and Them is even better than the loud parts. I don't know. This band turned my tastes upside down here and there. So I remember that. I fucking love it. This album is still, and to me, the recording quality on this album is better than just about all the other albums that they did. You said it was their 8th album. I was wondering why, because we listen to albums that come out after this that don't have this quality. I don't know what's going on here. I guess we'll talk about it, but they really fucking captured something here. And you know, so I really enjoyed listening to this album this week, but maybe now I'm gonna flip what I just said. Okay, maybe some of my boner for this album is because I heard it at a crucial time in my life. Yeah, and I remember having such a fucking boner for these guys that, like, they could do no wrong. But I have a little bit different perspective these days. For example, On the Run, I fucking hate. And, like, this is exacerbated by technological problems I have. My fucking iPod, every time it forces me to update, the fucking program gets worse. The iPod can no longer handle fast forward. So I listen to Breathe. Love that fucking song. On the Run comes on. I want to press fast forward and it won't fucking let me. And to me, this song is I don't fucking care if you synced it up to like the fucking tornado scene and with the Wizard of Oz or whatever the fuck you did with it. It's a song that fucking goes nowhere. If you aren't doing something with your music, if you aren't creating, if you aren't making me want to dance, like inspire laughter, something like that, like music has to do one of those things. If you aren't giving me memorable hooks, lyrics with a good message to get me through hard times, or inspiring me to move my hips despite my handicap of being white, then what good are you? So fuck that song. I don't have the patience. I don't just give everyone a fucking pass anymore. Like, if you fucking waste my time with songs, I fucking hate you. All right, I'm being a comedian here. I'm exaggerating, but you know what I mean. So this album is good, but also I listened to a ton of Judas Priest this week because, like, metal is still my number one. And that's it for now. Thanks.
Yeah, this, so I'm going to talk about a couple of the songs that you brought up in a minute, but yeah, this is like one of the greatest records ever made, right? So I was surprised that this was their 8th album. So if you look at their first 7 records, they went about gold. So they had fan base. I don't know about how big they were, but to go from like 7 gold records to like the 3rd greatest selling album of all time is quite a difference. So one of the things is they pulled out a lot of the jammier stuff that they do put back in later on, but it is essentially stripped out of this record. They don't go too off the rails with jammy stuff. Now, when you talked about the wall, okay, so YouTube is wrong. Wikipedia is wrong at some points, right? It said that the wall went 23 times platinum. But when I looked up the greatest selling albums, the wall is like, whatever, 17 or 20. And then this is on... is number 3. So I don't know, like, that's 23. I think somebody typed some shit in wrong, but Whatever. I don't know. It's fucking Wikipedia, so there's wrong shit on there all over the place. But it is, it's insane how many like copies that this album has sold. There was a 2023 remastered version of this put on YouTube 6 months ago, and it has 9 million views. So a fucking album from 1973 that was put up in 2023 has 9 million views in 6 months on top of the fucking 20, 30, whatever amount of million. So this one, like 15 times platinum, but that's like in the United States. So it's sold shit tons all over the rest of the world, however much that is. So yeah, people are not tired of this album. They're still listening to it. And like this record is going to live forever, probably even more than any of their other albums. Like this record will never die. So yeah, I think I forgot over the years that all of these songs are strung together and there's no silence between anything. And I love that. And it really helps the flow. I think all of their records essentially do that, that we're listening to this week. There's no like end of a song and then like silence and then like the beginning of a song, really. And so, and also it's crazy how much classic rock that these guys wrote in 6 years. So the four albums we're talking about came out within 6 years, and it's probably some of the biggest, most classic music, classic rock music that's like ever been written. So these guys went from, I wasn't around obviously when these guys were smaller, so I don't know exactly what their reach was for the first seven albums of their career, but then to become like one of the staples of music forever, pretty much with one album is pretty insane. So when I first heard this record, when I listened to Breathe, the first thing I actually was thinking about when I was listening to that song was like The Wizard of Oz. I had never heard of The Dark Side of Oz. This was probably back in like late 90s or early 2000s or whatever. But that song in this record still made me think of The Wizard of Oz. So when I saw that there was something called The Dark Side of Oz, it didn't surprise me that somebody else was thinking that and like put the music to the movie. I have not seen The Dark Side of Oz. I do need to go back and watch it because it's a great movie, great soundtrack. So I'd like to see what they're like together. So you talked about people not trying to hog the spotlight. The song Money, right, is the perfect example. So you brought up that it's an odd time signature, the bass line. It's in 7/4. It's probably, it has to be one of the most famous odd time signature music lines of all time. And the bass line is the star of the show, right? So it's what everything is like revolving around. And Dave Gilmour is just like playing like the supporting role to the bass. He's not trying to overpower the bass. He's letting the bass shine and he's just fleshing out around it. I've talked about Queen does that. Brian May has done that before, where he's not trying to get in the way. He's not trying to overcast what the bass is doing or what the drum's doing or what somebody else is doing. He's just trying to add to it, like to be a team player instead of like trying to be the focal point. Because the focal point of Money is not the guitar. And but he's adding the pieces and he does a great job. Dave Gilmour is one of the best guitar players of all time. He's one of my favorites. Yeah, there's saxophone. I'm giving all saxophone pretty much forever a pass. When people are putting in, just put more of it in. So Us and Them is another one you brought up, which is banger song. It's not my favorite on the album, but I'm surprised that they picked that as a single over like Time or Money, because Money, it's like this universally fucking great song. So a couple of these records, I'm surprised they didn't flesh out a bit more or pick a different song when they for like a leading single. But then again, these guys were not the monsters that they are now or that everybody sees them as now back in that time. Like when this dropped, I mean. And then last one we'll talk about right now, Great Gig in the Sky. So I think back in the day, this might have been a hidden gem song on here. I don't think it is now. I think people are jerking off and jizzing over this song constantly. One of my favorite parts of the album, because it brings in a guest vocalist, Claire Tor, and she kills it on the song, takes it to an 11. There's also really nice piano in that song. So when I was looking her up, apparently she did this completely like improvised. They just played the track and she sang over it, probably hearing it a couple times. And that's how she recorded it. And it's great. And it pops. And that's what I love. I love guest stars. I love putting different things in, because you can always have these two, Dave Gilmour and Roger Waters, like singing together and kind of having a dynamic difference between the two. But like bringing in a woman is going to have a much more dynamic difference. And it fucking sounds great. And it's memorable. And I know everybody loves that song now. Jomo, what do you think of this record? How much you hate it?
Oh, dude. When I listened to Dark Side of the Moon, I was like, yeah, tell me you like Heroin without telling me you like Heroin. Like, this is one of those albums that is like, I can see why people like it, but I also fucking see why I hate it. And that means the most to me. This album has some boring, uneventful vibes that just waste a good afternoon's time. People who say Pink Floyd is like the greatest band of all time are delusional and bland. I know that's not Rob. Rob has his specific bands that he enjoys, but there are people that exist on this planet that say, yo, Pink Floyd's the greatest. They're not. They're pretty fucking terrible in my eyes. This whole album screams like pretentious. There's no effort. It's cuck music, if you will. Money fucking sucks. Roger Waters is mediocre at best as a bassist. And this music was decent for its time, right? But it's 2023, all right? These musicians peaked in high school. I'm not giving a rating for the week because this is a very overrated album, and I just don't get it. I'm boomering. Thank you.
Okay.
Who didn't see that coming? But yeah, couple of songs like Time. That's just like classic Pink Floyd. And one thing about Dave Gilmour is he doesn't always do. He's not a guy who's like notes per second. He doesn't really give a shit about that. Every note he plays matters. And you can hear it. Like whenever he plays something, he means it. There was an interview with Zakk Wylde, and he said that he was touring with Ozzy, and they were playing. I believe he said they were playing after Pink Floyd. I don't know what festival this would have been. And he said, you know, he's feeling good. And then he said he saw Dave Gilmour play like one note, and it made him feel like he knew nothing as a guitar player. So yeah, this dude is very intentional. He's great. I love his playing. He's really good. His guitar solos are fucking great. Anything else I want to say about this? Yeah, On the Run, I'm okay with On the Run. This whole record is made to kind of flow together, and there's pieces that will bridge one song to another. So yeah, I think it's a good use of like early electronics and music. I'm fine with the song. I'm fine with this whole album. Brain Damage is a banger song as well. There's a great guitar line in there. Is it overrated? I don't know. It's hard to say because yet, like Rob was saying, I also heard this record a long time ago when I was younger. So yeah, I don't know. Is it overrated? Is Appetite overrated? I don't know. Maybe it could be, but it's still good. It holds up. It sounds great. And yeah, I mean, I could listen to it a billion times. Is there anything else anyone wants to say about Dark Side?
Me. So I like Tool is another one of my all time favorite bands. And I'm pretty sure that they fucking love Pink Floyd. And like when I listen to something like Time, like, you know, this big old intro and like you got like there's percussion there, probably layers of percussion. And like, you know, it's not his normal drum set. It's other stuff there. I'm not saying that, you know, 46 and 2 is ripping it off or something, but I'm saying like when I think of pop music, it's kind of like cutting out every bit of fat possible. In this album, I'm getting some other vibes. There's something. There's some kind of experimentation here, and it takes its time, and I don't know. And so I think a lot of my favorite bands looked up to Pink Floyd. So like fucking, I don't know. I got something out of listening to this again. I'm glad we listened to this. That's it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Let's read a couple comments. First one says, you won't get masterpieces like this anymore. Is that true, Jomo?
Actually that is not true because we have Taylor Swift, who's a giant piece of shit. So there's that.
Nice.
Did you go see her new movie or what, Jomo?
You asking me if I would see the Taylor Swift movie? Are you fucking kidding me? Are you mental? You must be sick.
I thought you were a big fan. Next one says, it was the first album I ever bought. I was 14. I'm 64 now, and I still can't get enough Pink Floyd. Next one says, takes me to heights that no joint could. Next comment, I'm still convinced that the meaning of life is hidden somewhere in this record. And last, the official version with no interruptions between songs is the proper way to listen to this masterpiece. That is true. Yeah. Are we ready to move on?
Me, this is more of like a burnout record than a Chasing After Boys record. So I don't think comparing this to Taylor Swift makes much sense.
You know what? That's true. That's your opinion. That's your opinion. That's your fucking opinion, bro. Bro.
All right, we ready to move on?
Yeah, let's move on.
Okay, Wish You Were Here is a 6-track record released in 1975, coming in just over 41 minutes long. It's the band's 9th studio album, reaching number 1 on the US Billboard 200 chart, and contains a single, Have a Cigar. Wish You Were Here was recorded over numerous sessions throughout 1975 at EMI Studios in London, recording 4 days each week from 2:30 p.m. until very late in the evening. Pink Floyd found it difficult at first to devise any new material, especially as the success of The Dark Side of the Moon had left all four physically and emotionally drained. Richard White later described these sessions as falling within a difficult period, and Waters recalled them as torturous. Nick Mason found the process of multi-track recording drawn out and tedious. Gilmore was becoming increasingly frustrated with Mason, whose failing marriage and sense of apathy began to interfere with his drumming. Wish You Were Here is Floyd's second album with a conceptual theme, mostly at Roger Waters' direction. It reflects his feeling that the camaraderie that had served the band was by then largely absent. The themes include alienation and criticism of the music business. The bulk of the album is taken up by Shine On You Crazy Diamond, which is a 9-part tribute to founding member Syd Barrett, who left the band 7 years earlier due to his deteriorating mental health. Like with The Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd used studio effects and synthesizers. Guest singers include Roy Harper, who provided the lead vocals on Have a Cigar, and Vanetta Fields, who added backing vocals to Shine On You Crazy Diamond. On its release, Wish You Were Here received mixed reviews from critics who found its music uninspiring and inferior to the band's previous work. It has retrospectively received critical acclaim, hailed as one of the greatest albums of all time, and was cited by Richard Wright and David Gilmour as their favorite Pink Floyd album. Wish You Were Here has been certified 6 times platinum. Jomo, what do you think about Wish You Were Here?
Oh, Wish You Were Here. Pink Floyd, the Taylor Swift of the 1970s. Side one, Shine On You Crazy Diamond. 4 parts, 13 minutes fucking long. What the fuck is this dog shit? I get it. I'm a prog guy. But to me, this is, I hate this experimental, like, psychedelic shit that is composed so lazily. It's like, and 21 minutes for side one. I can never get those 21 minutes back of my life. You know, I've taken shits longer than that, and I appreciated every moment of that ever, but damn, man, Jesus Christ. I wasn't into it, man. Like, the album artwork shit. I just feel like they're like, I get it, Rob, you're right. Pink Floyd influenced Tool for sure. Right. But Tool
and Taylor Swift
of course, but Tool is vastly better than fucking Pink Floyd. And side two, oh great, even more bullshit to me. It's like only listenable song, and the only song that I recognized was Have a Cigar off this album. Every other song just offended my ears. This is just like, this is all bad teeth, colonizing music. You know, I recognize Wish You Were Here. I do not acknowledge it as a song, though, at all. What? Okay. It's not a song in my eyes. I have a prejudice to Pink Floyd. That's all I got to say.
Because they're English or because of the music?
Both.
Okay. Are you all set?
Yeah, that's it. I just spew hate and fucking nonsensical bullshit. So
yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm giving this number 2 for the week. So Wish You Were Here. Okay. So Jomo says he doesn't consider it a song, but I'm surprised that, like, okay, with how popular Wish You Were Here is, it has to be one of their most popular songs. Now, I don't know the counts or whatever the top 10 most popular Floyd songs are, but Wish You Were Here has to be like top 3. I would think. I love the guitar work in the song. The solo in the beginning is fucking awesome. I used to play it all the time. And one of my exes loved the song. One time when I saw Velvet Revolver, they did a cover of this and it was fucking great. And if there's once, like I was saying, until like the sun collapses on itself, the Dark Side of the Moon will never go away. Ugh. If there was one Pink Floyd song from their entire fucking catalog that lives on forever, I think it might be Wish You Were Here. Like, that song, I know so many people love it. And it is a good song. It's a banger song, even though Jomo won't admit it. It is. And so this album, okay, so you have pre Dark Side of the Moon, which is like a jammier band, right? Now you have Dark Side of the Moon, which is kind of cutting out a bunch of the jammy stuff to make more of, I don't want to call it like radio songs, but you know, like more like cut to the chase. More, they're not hanging out doing stuff like on Animals or doing stuff like on Shine On You Crazy Diamond here, where they're playing like a 26-minute song. So they kind of trim down their structures on Dark Side of the Moon. Here we're getting some of the jammier stuff with the long Shine On You Crazy Diamond parts. So it's 9 parts altogether. I think the song is good, even though it's long as shit. There's a lot of stuff going on. The big chorus in it is one that I actually still think about quite a bit. It's a good ending and good starting to the album. So they split it in half essentially, and then put it, like, made it bookend the record instead of leaving it as one 26 minute long song and having it go in the middle of the album. Interesting choice. I don't know, but it's a fun song regardless. So these guys still loved Syd Barrett at this point, even though he had been out of the band. I'm pretty sure when a lot of people have members leave, a lot of the songs and stuff that they write or think about them is negative. So it's nice that these guys still loved him or were thinking about him or writing about him. Syd Barrett came to the recording studio when they were working on this to kind of hang out with them while they were doing it. Now, I think this record is still tight. And it's like surprising how tight and good of a record like a band can make when they're exhausted and they're angry at a lot of things. You're getting kind of a mix here of some of the more streamlined kind of musical structures and some of the jammier ones. So we're going to get to a point where we go kind of further into the jammier way of things. But here, if someone were to not like this, then I don't know. You're kind of getting both sides. So you either really, really love the jammy shit and you don't want the dark side stuff, or you really, really love the dark side stuff and you don't want the jammy stuff. Otherwise, I don't see anybody really besides Jomo on Earth not liking this record. Rob, what do you think of what you're here?
I'm giving this a second place also. When I was talking about how David Gilmour, when I was talking about how David Gilmour like did some Chromatic shit that like I thought when I was 15 and watching Pulse, which is their 1995 live album, I had it on. My brother brought it home on VHS. We're watching that, and I'm watching him. He was playing "Shine On You Crazy Diamond" when I noticed he was doing some Chromatic shit. He snuck it in there, so it's like that's when I learned something about how context means so much. Like it's like because like you can bookend it in such a way that it doesn't even sound like what it is. I don't know. Like it's like I was witnessing a magic trick and like I shit that I thought was impossible. But yeah, like I remember watching that on DVD VHS and thinking I was not bored at all. To me it was like the suspense was such an important character there, and they could play quiet, they could build it up, they could I don't know, I was fucking on board for so much of it. Yeah, Shine On You Crazy Diamond is actually one of my favorite Pink Floyd songs, and how do I say this, I don't know, I don't think I have heard Wish You Were Here the album until this week. I knew that song from the live DVD, but I didn't know what album it was on or whatever. But I fucking love David Gilmour, and I'm gonna contrast that when we talk about The Wall. I'm gonna be tearing apart Roger Waters here, but yeah, I love David Gilmour. I love his voice. I love his guitar playing. I don't know that I can express the less is more thing enough. You touched on it with the story from what's his face, the dude from Ozzy Osbourne. But yeah, okay, so yeah, Have a Cigar, I love. Yeah, Wish You Were Here, that's a song to me that's like Stairway to Heaven status, where it is a classic song. I've heard it so many times, hippies busting out a guitar at a fucking fire, like, you know, campfire, like, and it's like, okay, let's see who I can impress by playing this riff. It's such an identifiable riff, and I don't know, I have to like combat my own prejudice here, because on some level, like, I don't see, okay, like, is okay, the question is Pink Floyd a pop band? It is and it isn't, you know, like Dark Side of the Moon, in a way that's a pop album, because it's played on the radio, there's identifiable bass lines. But to me, that, like, why is it that I'm trying to say something about how, like, okay, I'm stuttering to explain something that I don't really know how to explain. But okay, my best way to explain this is I had a thing that I realized most concretely when I was listening to Godspeed You Black Emperor. That's a band, I don't know if I'm ever going to pick them. It's one of those bands that I expect both of you to hate. But it's like they have 20-minute long songs, and like they'll play a bass line for 5 minutes. One bass line for 5 minutes. Meanwhile, like this is a huge fucking band. There's nine people in the band when they play live, I think, and then like when they recorded, they might have 20 at certain point, or like for the session, they might have 20 fucking people. But like they have string sections, they have all the shit. So it's like you have this bass line that goes on forever, but you're not bored of it because like all the other parts are changing 1,000 times. So it's technical and prog on one end, but it's totally fucking pop on another end. And I'll compare it to Tool again. There's something about it that's so basic that every headbanger who doesn't give a fuck about music loves it. And then there's something so technical that a nerd who fucking studies theory and whatever is like, oh my God, I've never heard anything like this before. Or, you know, or I've never heard it done so well. I've heard versions of it done poorly. And that I finally heard something that, A, blows my mind, and B, appeals to a broader audience than I thought was possible. I thought this was for nerds only, or I thought it was, okay, well, I got way off track here. But anyways, I think what I want to say about Pink Floyd is, some of my favorite Pink Floyd moments are identifiable bass line with key changes or moods changes or like sudden chord changes where like, you know, you could almost not even tell that they're happening. It just sounds like regular fucking music. But for a nerd like me, I'm like, oh, like this, that was not the chord I was expecting. That was not the whatever I was expecting. This does something for me, but one reason music doesn't age well or whatever is like modern music. There's such a bias towards turning up turning up the volume all the fucking way, turning up the compression all the way. You're smashed in the face at all times. Whereas you put on an album like you put on an album like Night at the Opera. Like the dynamics in that are such that like if you listen to it while you're driving fast on the highway, it's like I can't even fucking hear it. All the wind and shit is blowing it away. But I don't. So is that recording better or worse? I mean, I'm saying a volume button exists for a fucking reason, and if it's too quiet, you can turn it up. I don't know. There's something about these old records that sound more fucking. I don't know. We're going super fucking digital in the modern age, and that isn't necessarily good. So like when I come back to some of these old albums, it's like I'm moving out to the woods and I'm learning how to hear the birds again. There's something like natural happening here that I like a lot. So but then again, you know, after a week away in the woods, I'm gonna come back to the city and I'm gonna fucking go to a concert and get my face ripped off, and I'm gonna be like, I needed that week away in the woods to appreciate the concert that I'm in now. So I don't know. I had a good I had an up and down week listening to Pink Floyd. Some of the stuff I heard is like as good as I remember, and then. I kept listening to metal because I don't know. Yeah, I'm gonna contradict everything I said 5 minutes ago. But yeah, fucking turn up the bass. I need bass. That's it.
we don't deserve Rob. Thank you, Rob. One of the things you brought up is about like not being bored, especially in kind of like the longer instrumental pieces. And I was thinking about that, especially when listening to Animals, but Shiny You Crazy Diamond as well. These guys are like they're becoming masters of like making. Instrumental music that you, like doesn't make you bored. And a lot of their stuff, when I was listening to it, it's like just vibing out, listening to it, kind of, I don't know, just being in the moment. They do a great job with it. Shine On You Crazy Diamond, one of the parts between 1 and 5 also has sax in it. More sax, layer it, fucking harmonize with it, do everything, give me more of it. So Have a Cigar. Whenever I see the name Have a Cigar, I'm like, oh yeah, that song's okay. Then I put it on and I'm like, oh shit, no, this song's great. It definitely has one of the catchiest choruses in like the entire Pink Floyd catalog. It feels like part jam song and part structured song. I guarantee there's an extended version of Have a Cigar out there that's like fucking 20 minutes and they jam out. It's got to be fun to play. And then last song on here that I love is Welcome to the Machine. And some guy was talking about that song and he was like, oh yeah, that's one of like the worst songs in the catalog. I was like, oh, I could listen to that song like 1,000 times in a row. It's one of my all-time favorite Pink Floyd songs. keyboard in it, like, makes the song sound so creepy. I don't know. I love it. I could listen over and over and never get bored of it. To me, that's like eternal banger status. Is there anything else that anyone wants to say about this before we read some comments? Nope. All right, first one. As with most Floyd albums, this is not a collection of songs, but a complete work of art that must be experienced in its entirety from beginning to end with no interruptions. I mean, the guy's right. I don't know, like, you guys know how I feel about a lot of bands' fans. I think most of them are cucks, but... next one says, a truly groundbreaking record for music history. Next one, as amazing as Dark Side of the Moon and The Wall are, this is still my favorite album. Next comment, they managed to record and release 4 masterpieces in a period of just over 6 years. That's what I was saying before. It's like incredible what they pumped out in this era of Pink Floyd. And lastly, Pink Floyd is still the best rock band I've ever heard. Is that true, Drama? Did you leave that comment?
Oh, I hate you.
Anyway, are we ready to move on?
Why are you?
I'm gonna say. So to me, there's something called a weed album where, like, if you're high enough, every note is fucking sacred and the best thing you ever heard. And there's something about that to this band. Like, that sometimes I fucking love this band and think every note is precious. And sometimes I'm like, fucking skip. I don't.
No, I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever.
Okay, Animals is a 5-track record released in 1977, coming in just under 42 minutes long. It's the band's 10th studio album, reaching number 3 on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart. There's no singles on this album. Animals continued the long-form compositions that made up their previous works, including 1975's Wish You Were Here. It initially received mixed reviews, but gained more favorable reviews in later years and is considered one of the band's best works. Animals is both a progressive rock album and a concept album focusing on the social political conditions of mid-1970s Britain and was a change from the style of Pink Floyd's work. I'm sure that stuff interests Jomo quite a bit. Loosely based on George Orwell's political fable Animal Farm, the album's lyrics describe various classes in society as different kinds of animals: the predatory dogs, the ruthless pigs, and the mindless and unquestioning herd of sheep. The album is a critique of capitalism, and the sheep eventually rise up and overpower the dogs. In 1975, Pink Floyd bought a 3-story block of church halls in North London, their deal with EMI for unlimited studio time in return for a reduced percentage of sales had expired, and they converted the building into a recording studio and storage facility. The construction took up most of 1975, and in April 1976, they started work on Animals at the new facility. Tension within the band during production culminated in keyboardist Richard Wright's firing 2 years later. The album's cover, conceived by Roger Waters, shows an inflatable pig floating between 2 chimneys of a power station. Pink Floyd released no singles from Animals, but promoted it through the In the Flesh tour. Waters' agitation with audiences during this tour inspired their next album, The Wall. Animals has been certified 4 times platinum. All right, so, like, okay, I'm giving this number 4 for the week. And it's not that it's bad. I like this record quite a bit, and I got lost in it for a bit. There's a lot of jammy instrumental stuff going on in this album. There are 5 songs on here, right? In this album. So this record is 42 minutes long. There are 5 songs, and 2 of the songs are less than 90 seconds long. Wow. So it starts off with Pigs on the Wing, part 1, and then Pigs on the Wing, part 2 is the last song, which they're essentially the same song. There's some different stuff going in, maybe a different use of dynamics. There's definitely a little bit of different lyrics in them. But that song was stuck in my head for quite a bit this week. I'm pretty sure, like, Becca was like, yo, quit singing that shit. Cause I was just humming like the 10-second loop as I always do. Nice. But yeah, it's the core of this record is the 3 songs, Dogs, Pigs, and Sheep. And a lot of it, like I was saying, is very jammy. And I don't think I've heard any of these songs before. At least I don't remember them. And so, there are some people who say this is Pink Floyd's best record. And, there's a lot of stuff to see here. Okay, Dogs is over 17 minutes long, and it's still not the longest Pink Floyd song. There's a song Echoes, which is 23 and a half minutes, and it takes up the entire second side of the metal LP. I don't know if that is their longest song, but it has to be up there. Anyway, there are parts in this album that, okay, like in the song Pigs, there's like pig noises, like pig squeals. Yeah, I get it. I don't really need fucking pig squeals. In the song Sheep, there's like a sheep making noise. Like, okay, really don't need it. Anyway, yeah, so this is more jammy. There's a lot of instrumental parts. But like I was saying before, these guys are like becoming these masters of of being able to keep you occupied instead of being bored when they go out on this tangent of kind of vibing and rocking out with each other. And so, yeah, when they said there's no singles from this record, I don't know what would have been a single from this record to begin with. Again, there's two songs that are pretty much like very close to the same thing. They're 90 seconds long. And then you have three like 10 minute long plus songs. So with the exception of making a shorter remix of Sheep or something to get radio play, I don't know what the fuck they would have gotten on the radio from this album anyway. When I listen to this record, there's a bunch of parts where I'll hear a note and I think it's going to another, like somewhere else besides where it goes, but where I expect it to go is like me singing, like, so I'm singing along like in my head, and then where I think it's going to go is like the chorus to a song on like Dark Side of the Moon. So like I'm hearing other Pink Floyd songs. It's like, yeah, maybe they're using the same key a lot. I don't know the same transition. I don't know what they're using, but there's definitely times where I'm kind of in the song that they're doing and I'm mentally assuming it's going to go to another song that they've already done before. And yeah, so again, I was saying like it's interesting that they took, so you had Dark Side of the Moon with the style that they did that in. Then you have partly jammy, partly kind of radio structured or whatever For Wish You Were Here. And then this one goes in the complete opposite direction where this is like completely jammy and no chance of radio at all. So this record is good. I like it. I liked vibing out to it. I have to drive out like somewhere that's like a 40 minute drive later on. And I might just vibe to this while I'm in the car driving. Cause like, I do like this record a lot. There's a lot of like great playing on it. And yeah, so again, like, I don't know if I've ever even heard these songs on the radio. Sheep, I swear I've heard somewhere. It's catchy as hell. It seems like it would have been on the radio, but again, when it's like 13 minutes or whatever, I don't know who's like playing that without a remix or without like a mandatory Metallica or whatever they would have for Pink Floyd where they'll play like anything. Doesn't matter like how deep of a cut it is. Rob, what do you think of Animals?
Let's see, for the notes I have first song, just a fucking normal song, fuck you. And I have Dogs. My favorite part so far is this, like, there are multiple guitar solos, one clean, one with a bit of fuzz. It isn't call and response, but they play with each other. And the like the less is more theme coming up, the dynamic going up or down, silence and anticipation are part of it. Yeah, so like I fucking love David Gilmour always, and I'm really getting that on this album. And then the guitar solo at the end of Pigs is my favorite part. So yeah, fucking big thumbs up to David Gilmour. Fucking love that guy. Yeah, I think this album was okay. I'm giving it 4th also. I don't have a lot of bad or good to say about it other than fucking love David Gilmour. That's it.
Yeah, Pigs, I think that like Pigs could have some of like Dave Gilmour's best playing ever. He also uses a talk box in that song for a little while, and I don't know if he's ever used it in the entire discography of Floyd since that song, but it sticks out because you don't hear many people use something like that. And if you listen to the song Dogs, like the first half of it, I swear it sounds like it's like a dance song. Like it's like disco music almost. Every time I listen to it, it has like this dance swing to it. And I just picture like a bunch of white people dancing to it in the 70s. So I don't know, like it definitely changes halfway through or whatever. It becomes like a whole different song, but the beginning has like this, I don't know, very specific dance kind of beat vibe to it or whatever. Jomo, how much you hate this record?
This album makes me sick to my stomach. This album can be personified by as like the douchey guy at a party who brings an acoustic guitar. Like, why the fuck do you exist, you date rapist? Three songs, all over 10 minutes long. I'm sorry, you lose me at 4 minutes and 30 seconds. Anything past that is reserved for Tool and good scotch, sir. That's, I'm just fucking saying, this album reminds me of Jack Falcon. It gives you, it goes on and on with little to no substance, vacuous and devoid of meaning. I want my 41 minutes and 40 seconds back after listening to this hippie bullshit. Fuck the, I fucking hate this fucking bullshit.
Thank you, Jomo. Very inspiring.
Yeah, I'm glad. Fuck you too.
Anyway, yeah, I've listened to this record a bunch, and I know there's like tons of stuff to still discover in it. So I'm gonna listen to it. I'm gonna vibe out to it. Hit the lights. Not be a date rapist. All right, nice. Let's read a couple YouTube comments. First one: best Pink Floyd album completely depends on what mood you were in at the time. Yeah, that checks out. Next one says: is it just me, or is Dogs one of the most brilliant tracks of all time? Is it, Jomo? Next one says, the 70s have got to be the greatest decade for music. Just the explosion of genres and talent was incredible. Next comment, Pink Floyd's most underrated album. And lastly, this soothes my soul. So yeah, there's going to be people who are all in on Animals. Does anyone need to use the bathroom?
Why are you gay?
Or are we going to push through?
Push through?
All right, we push through.
I'll be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.
Okay. The Wall is a 26-track double record released in 1979, coming in just under 81 minutes long. It's the band's 11th studio album, reaching number one on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart. It contains the singles Another Brick in the Wall Part 2, Run Like Hell, and Comfortably Numb. The Wall is a rock opera that explores Pink, a jaded rock star whose eventual self-imposed isolation from society forms a figurative wall. Roger Waters conceived The Wall during Pink Floyd's 1977 In the Flesh tour, modeling the character Pink after himself and Pink Floyd's former songwriter, Syd Barrett. Recording spanned from December 1978 to November 1979. Producer Bob Ezrin helped refine the concept and bridge tensions during the recording as the band members were struggling with personal and financial issues at the time. The Wall was the last album to feature Pink Floyd as a quartet. Keyboardist Richard Wright was fired by Waters during production, but stayed on as a salaried musician. It was a commercial success, topping the U.S. charts for 15 weeks. The record initially received mixed reviews from critics, many of whom found it overblown and pretentious, but later received accolades as one of the greatest albums of all time. The cover art is one of Pink Floyd's most minimal, a white brick wall with no text. So originally, I believe that if you look at the artwork, their logo the logo of Pink Floyd, The Wall, was not on like the actual album. So it was like literally just like the bricks behind it. From 1980 to 1981, Pink Floyd performed The Wall in full on a tour that featured an elaborate theatrical effects. And in 1982, it was adapted into a feature film for which Waters wrote the screenplay. At 1979's 23rd Annual Grammy Awards, The Wall was nominated for Album of the Year, but lost to Christopher Cross with his self-titled debut album. You guys remember that classic? and was also nominated for Best Rock Performance by a duo or group with vocal, but lost to Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band with Against the Wind. The Wall has been certified 12 times platinum. Now, it could be 23 times platinum, but I think in the United States it's 12 times platinum, and is one of the best known concept albums ever made, the best selling double album of all time, and is the second best selling album in the band's catalog behind The Dark Side of the Moon. Rob, what do you think of The Wall?
So before we get into that, so according to like Spotify statistics, Another Brick in the Wall Part 2 has 788 million plays. I think that's their number one. Comfortably Numb has 536 million. I think that's their number two. Both of those are beyond anything on Dark Side. And then Wish You Were Here. Wish You Were Here has 642,000. So that's their number two. Another Brick in the Wall Part 2, I knew was super fucking famous and figured that was their, you know, I've heard that on the radio. I've heard people fucking hum it out loud. That makes total fucking sense. Comfortably Numb, I have sang that to people. There's parts of it that are so like silly and like memorable to me. The mood change that comes with, David Gilmour singing, like, because Roger Waters, I hate Roger Waters for a couple of reasons. I don't know if I hate him, but like, from what I heard, he's another fucking Billy Corgan type but he kind of like, as far as I heard, Billy Corgan did like in the middle of their career where like they were a fucking four piece, and then he's like, no, you're not the singer anymore. I'm the singer, even though he's worse at it. And I'm a big fucking deal, and my cock is a million miles long. And I don't know, like I've in a way he's as good as he thinks he is. In a way, he's really fucking not. And like this album to me is not pure music. This is like whether you call this album pretentious or not. To me, like, I don't know if it's because I've seen the movie. No, it's not just because I've seen the movie. Like, so many of these songs aren't songs. They're song fragments. Okay, if their previous, like, if so much of their catalog is, like, jamming for 20 fucking minutes, then so many of these songs are, like, half songs, where it's, like, verse, chorus, verse, abrupt ending. It's, like, This album was actually in my head a lot these past like weeks or 2 weeks, but like it annoyed me a lot of the times that I was in my head because it was like it wasn't like my favorite moments coming back to me when I was in the Amazon van. It was like the weird, like this song fucking ended too abruptly and now that's playing in my head all fucking week. And like, so like this album kind of got worse the more I listened to it. I listened to this a lot when I was like 17. I really needed my music to be like, you know, not too intense and kind of like minor key. And so I remember loving and listening to this a lot, but like I didn't really have too good of a time this week. Contrary to what I just said, this was another album that I idolized for its like, you know, taking a concept to if me and a lot of people I knew struggled to write a song or four songs, like this guy wrote something like this complex story like sequentially and didn't decide to like throw away key parts of the story before he recorded it. You know, I know I personally, like, I don't know how many times I worked on a song and it's like I loved this song yesterday and now I fucking hate it. But like okay, I'm gonna go through a little bit of the story here. So it's like early in the album, he's like old and crazy, and then that's like a story technique where you start like at an intense period, and then you go back. So you go back, he's getting fucked up as a kid. Songs about like, you know, being a kid, and then the devouring mother type. So we get into like psychology and Freud here. I don't know if this is you might say this is. Pretentious. I kind of fucking love it, whether it's pretentious or not. But like this, you know, psychology of like the mother, the devouring motherhood type, who like rips off the balls of his own son, prevents him from having sex or like, you know, getting dirty in any way. And then the next song is Young Lust. I need a dirty woman. And then like One of My Turns, the song after it, it's like partying, taking a woman home, wanting time and attention from them, can't have fun anymore, dark nights, trying to squeeze fun out of another person, like a codependency thing. What shall we do for fun? Go to a restaurant, fuck, learn to fly, call the cops, I think it's time I stopped. You know, fucking drugs and, you know, I think I judged all of this shit when my first couple of years listening to this. Now I see it like there's so many fucking ups and downs on this album. Like abuse from parents, and then like, you know, the ups and downs of like, oh, I'm famous and I can bang chicks, to like, oh, I'm not getting what I want from chicks, and drugs is, you know, the ups and downs. I'm fucking, yeah, this is brutal, man. Don't leave me now, pleading with her not to leave, because, you know, it used to be that you fucked for fun, and now it's like, oh, I need this woman, and she doesn't like me because I'm a fucking mess when I do drugs. Another brick in the wall. I don't need arms around me. Drugs to calm me, nothing. I don't know if he's trying to convince himself, or if that's from my own struggles with addiction, there's so many fucking ups and downs here. Goodbye, cruel world. So he's thinking about suicide next. I relate. Hey, you, Freud. To string all this together is a fucking feat. So I don't know. I kind of worship this album and I kind of fucking hate it for the reasons I just described. I'm giving it third place. That's it.
Yeah, I'm giving it third place as well. Okay. So there's so much music on this set, right? It's crazy. So when we did the Red Hot Chili Peppers, they had a double album, and I think it was like over 2 hours, and like everyone was burned out. And it wasn't like the record was bad, but it was like it kept going. It's like it didn't need to be a double record. They could have kind of condensed it down to one, and the other shit was like B-sides. Now, there's going to be people who obviously like jerk the band off, who say every song is fucking amazing. But there's a difference between The Wall and that record, because this album is just about 80 minutes long, and I'm not bored listening to this. So this was made into a movie and I watched it this morning. I'm never going to watch the movie again in my entire life. It was like a one-time thing ever. Now I will listen to this record again, like all the way through. But the movie is kind of whack, although it strings it together. And it does a good job of it. The animation in the movie is like, is impressive today. So the movie was made in 1982. Like there, it goes between, like actual footage and animation, kind of like something like Monty Python or whatever. And it's really good. Like I'm surprised like how good the animation was for that movie. Still now, like I'm impressed by it. So it did a good job of telling the story. It's got a good story to begin with anyway, and so it told it well. My favorite part of the movie is when the girls want to go backstage to meet Pink, and they don't have the backstage passes, so they're going to suck the security guard's dick, and he's like sitting in the chair, and the girl's head. So like picture a like when you drive your car through, and there's like a person in the window like handing you a ticket, right, or you pay them or whatever for a toll, how you can't see, that you can only see like the window, you can't see anything below the window. She's below that part because she's sucking the guy's dick, and he pulls out like a backstage pass, and you just see like an arm come up and grab it and like pull it back down. That shit made me laugh. That was great. That was my favorite part of the movie. But anyway, this record though, okay, there's probably 9 to 10 songs on here that are pretty common to most people, even if you're not a big Pink Floyd Floyd fan. Okay, so there's 3 singles on this album and this double record of 26 songs. But 9 to 10 of them have made it onto the radio. Like I was saying before with Dark Side of the Moon, I'm pretty sure every song from there has made it onto the radio at some point. Okay, so, but it's cool. So when I was listening to this, I've never listened to this record all the way through, and I have never seen the movie before we did Pink Floyd here. The cool thing is okay, so because it's like 10 songs that are like bangers that everybody knows, you kind of have like these puzzle pieces. And when it gets put into context with everything else, you're seeing the bigger picture. And I loved that. I thought it was great because there might be a song that you're like, okay, I don't know if I'm into that. But then it rolls into a song, you know, that's like banger status. And you're like, okay, I'm back in. So like some of the transitions, okay, the second song, like the Thin Ice transitions, like rolls right into another Brick in the Wall Part 1. Then you have The Happiest Days of Our Lives, which rolls right into another Brick in the Wall Part 2. And I don't know if people know this who aren't huge in the Pink Floyd, but there is another Brick in the Wall Part 3, which comes in towards the end of the second disc or beginning of the second disc. Somewhere further down the line, there's a Part 3. I'm pretty sure I've heard the song like over the years. It didn't like, now it's not going to sound completely like Alien because the Brick in the Wall songs are kind of like building off of each other. But I don't know if I was aware that there was a Part 3. And also like when I was listening to like The Happiest Days of Our Lives, I probably thought forever and probably still would have if we didn't listen to this, that it was actually the beginning part of another Brick in the Wall Part 2, because like they roll into each other like so fucking well. So yeah, again, I would listen to this album in its entirety multiple times. I'd be fine with it, but yeah, I don't think I would go back to the movie. There's some like squirm moments in it, so he does try to kill himself, especially when he's like kind of cutting himself with a razor. Yeah, it's like I was like, nice. I don't know if I can really watch this anymore, but but anyway, yeah, it's impressive. I know there's people who love the movie. There are people commenting about how fucking great it is. Yeah, it's fine. It's just for me, I was like, okay, I've seen it once, I never have to see it again. I've experienced it, I can move on. Joma, what do you think of The Wall?
Oh, every time I listen to this, I listen to it twice for torture, though, because I'm a sadist. I was like, ah, every Smith College douchebag's favorite album. Oh, are you guys? I can smell the BO, the Nag Champa, and the fucking patchouli oil right now, man. Like, this is fucking terrible. Don't interrupt me, bitch. I'm finishing. How fucking lame do you have to be to have three parts to another Brick in the Wall? Mm-hmm. Like, but the song's message is enduring. It's relevant to today's issues. Teachers need to stop trying to fuck students, okay? Leave that kid alone, okay? Leave his butthole alone, you blue-haired fuck. I just want to thank Martin Scorsese for injecting this shit-era music in all of his fucking movies. Holy fuck, Pink Floyd makes me sick. I'd rather risk, you know, battling cancer. Stage 2, not 3. It's like the Armenian genocide, if you will. It happened, but who really cares anymore? This progressive rock theme live show concept is the only redeeming quality of this album. However, it's still dog shit. Thank you.
So, Jomo, you know those guys you were talking about who bring their acoustic guitars to parties and play Wish You Were Here?
Yeah.
If you open up their backpack, is a copy of The Wall in there?
That and Rufy Culottas.
You open up the backpack, there's a Rufy Culotta copy of The Wall just in case people have a CD player there. You can try to bring them over to see your point of view, how it's the best thing ever. So yeah, there. Okay, bangers on here. Okay, so this album, right? It sold shit tons of copies. So many songs on here have insane views. So even, okay, the Thin Ice, right? Not a hit from the album. The song on YouTube right now has 11 million views. So this record is still extremely popular. There's a comment on that song. Someone says you can't just listen to one song. You got to listen to the whole thing in order. But okay. I don't want to talk about this record for fucking 10 hours because you could, but okay. Another Brick in the Wall Part 2, banger, right? Mother, not my favorite. I could see people like loving that song. I'm surprised actually it wasn't a single from here. Song Goodbye Blue Sky. There's a guitar riff in that song that sounds exactly like the guitar riff from Fade to Black by Metallica. They're very similar. They are different. Some would argue they're not the same. I'm going to say that Metallica stole it anyway. Okay. Young Lust, fucking banger song. Oh yeah, catchy as hell, great instrumentation. Okay, Another Brick in the Wall Part 3, fucking banger. Hey You, banger. Comfortably Numb, fucking banger. Has to be one of the most famous Dave Gilmour solos of all time. It's awesome. Everyone on earth loves that song. Run Like Hell, banger. Okay, I've heard that song tons of times before. I definitely did not know it was named Run Like Hell. I might not have even realized that it was Pink Floyd. One of the best songs on the record, no-brainer single. So yeah, there's like bangers throughout here. And then you have the other ones that are piecing it together. Some of them are going to be like some of the songs on The Dark Side of the Moon, which they're not really songs. They're just kind of noise things to keep the album flowing. But yeah, just, I don't know, the transitions from a lot of these are very smooth and they work really well. And to get something to flow this well and be 80 minutes long and not be boring as shit, yeah, it takes a lot of trial and error, really. Because like I was saying, Red Hot Chili Peppers did that a couple years ago, and most of the people here were just bored as shit like halfway through. So, yeah, what they created here is great. I'm very surprised that they lost the Grammy. It's funny they lost the Grammy to a guy that like no one knows anything about, and then this album becomes like one of the biggest records of all time. Anyway, yeah, again, I would listen to it all the way through. I like this record. I had never heard it all the way through before, but yeah, it's good. Check out the movie if you haven't seen it. Is there anything else anyone wants to say about The Wall?
I think it's telling that you haven't listened to it all the way through. It's like, yeah, yeah. So many fucking well-known bangers, but yeah, I don't know. This was a bit of a slog for me.
The bangers on this record alone, you could just pull them out and they could make their own album. They could just have an album of straight bangers. But yeah, there's a whole following for this record. Let's read a couple YouTube comments. We'll get out of here. First one, the transition from Empty Spaces to Young Lust is fucking incredible. Next one says, to be honest, I rarely listen to this record. I'm more of a Wish You Were Here and Animals kind of guy, but as a concept album, there are a few that rival it. Next one, the guitar solo and comfortably Numb will always take my mind to another place. Yeah, that's very possibly like his most famous solo ever. Dave Gilmour, I believe, has a writing credits to three of the songs on this album. Roger Waters tried to sue him at one point over rights or whatever for this record, and or Comfortably Numb, and that's one of the songs that David Gilmour has the writing credit for. Next one, Run Like Hell was the first song that ever mesmerized me. And lastly, humanity needs to send this album into space. We must share this masterpiece with other galaxies. Jomo, if you were to pick one, would it be 2112 or what?
2112 is not like it was a fucking masterpiece from Rush, but it's not my favorite. It'd have to be Moving Pictures.
Oh yeah, that's right. So I'm just gonna read you the other records that they put out. So they had Piper at the Gates of Dawn in 1967, A Saucer Full of Secrets in 1968, More in 1969, Amagama in 1969, Adam Hart Mother in 1970, Metal in 1971, Obscured by Clouds in 1972. Then you have the era we just talked about, The Final Cut in 1983, A Momentary Lapse of Reason in 1987. The Division Bell in 1994, and The Endless River in 2014. Apparently they had one record about 10 years ago. All right, are we ready to go, or is there anything else that anyone wants to say about Pink Floyd? What are we doing next week, Jomo?
So we're going to talk about this live right now. There's two choices I'm going to give you, Primus or Foo Fighters.
I would do either, but we did one Primus record before. No, we did Foo Fighters before, or did we just do one?
We did one Foo Fighters when we did when Old Boy fucking OD'd.
No.
When Taylor Hawkins OD'd.
I feel like we've done Foo Fighters before. No?
We haven't done Foo Fighters, retard.
Oh, okay.
It's up to you guys. What do you want? Choose.
Rob, what are you thinking?
I guess it's Foo Fighters.
All right,
let's do Foo Fighters.
We're doing Foo Fighters. All right, take care. Have a good day.